You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Taking out the trash has gotten a little more complicated in California. Yeah, you still have your black and blue and green bins, but now you're supposed to put a lot more than just dead leaves and grass trimmings in that green bin. It's for food now. You're supposed to be putting food in it. That's a big change, and a lot of people have questions about how to do that. What to do exactly with that green bin? KCRW's Kaylee Wells gathered some questions from you, and she has some answers for us right now. Hi, Kaylee.
Hey, Steve.
So the green bin has caused all kinds of confusion, including myself, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because I'm easily confused anyway. So let's clear it up. What kind of questions have you been getting?
Well, dozens of them. I want to say maybe 3 or 4 dozen questions came through. And most of them fall into one of 4 buckets, no pun intended. Mm. One of them, what can I put in this bin? Just what am I allowed to put in here? There's still a lot of confusion about that.
Okay.
2, how do I put stuff in there without getting it really gross in the summer?
Naturally.
3, I live in an apartment and I don't have a green bin yet. What am I supposed to do? And the 4th is sort of some version of, well, I have this alternative that I have. Like, I already composted my garden, or I already throw it down the garbage disposal. Can I do that instead of this green bin thing? So those are your 4 main buckets.
A lot of questions. And you're here with the dirt.
Wow, look at you.
See,
2 puns already.
I know.
Wow.
Well, I'm really good with puns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's start with the first one. What can you put in it? What can go in that green bin?
Yeah, so it's really confusing depending on the way that you compost. But the kind of good news is when we pile all of our stuff together into these giant industrial composters, you get to include a lot. Basically, anything that used to be alive gets to be in there. So we're not just talking about like orange peels and rotting apples. We're talking about cardboard because that came from a tree. And we're talking about chicken bones and coconut husks and all those things that are usually really hard to break down in, say, a community compost bin. You can put all of those in these industrial compost bins. So none of this can go in those plastic bags, though. I want to throw that in there. No matter how compostable they claim to be, you have to put everything just completely naked directly into your green bin.
I'm glad you brought up the compostable bags, by the way. I've got some listener questions that I want to play for you. And one of them is about those bags.
Hi, this is Kristen. I'm downtown Los Angeles, and I'm currently working on a composting system for my office. I've been using the green compostable bags and just found out that those are not allowed in the composting bins that the city's providing, and I was just wondering why.
Why?
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking that because it's kind of counterintuitive. You hear the word compostable bag and you think, well, yeah, it's going to be compostable. I asked Rachel Wagner to explain this. So she is the director of the State Department that's in charge of this whole big green bin overhaul, CalRecycle.
The compostable bags, unfortunately, don't break down in our industrial composters. There are plastic particles in those compostable bags. So even they break down in your home compost, they're not going to break down the right way in an industrial compost.
All right, so no composting bags in the green bins. All of that food, though, in a bin sounds really scary, Kaylee. Let's hear from Brianna from Agora Hills, who sent us this question that a lot of other folks also had.
My question is, what are people doing to get the compost from their kitchen into their bins? Since we can't use bags, the bin itself gets really, really gross. If I don't put my yard compost in the compost bin, the bottom of my bin is also disgusting. So there seems to be kind of a mold, just overall grossness, ick factor going on. And I'm wondering what we're supposed to be doing to lessen that.
The ick factor, Kaylee.
Yeah, so like I said, this is a point that a lot of our listeners came to us with, and it's not even that hot out yet, and this is already a problem that they're facing. And anyone knows that rotting food in the sun is like a major recipe for disaster. So put that question to Wagner also, and here's what she recommended.
And so one of the things you can do is you can layer your yard waste and your food waste in the can. Instead of using plastic bags, or, you know, sometimes what I will use is like a pizza box at the bottom because the pizza boxes are all compostable now as well.
So that way the stuff on the bottom isn't the like wet stuff that sticks there and gets gross and moldy. Another thought, if you're like me and you don't have a garden or you don't eat a whole lot of pizza and you live in an apartment and it's a really big process to get outside to your green bin, or you want to give the sun less time to bake your food scraps, then you can put all of that stuff in a freezer drawer. I have an entire freezer drawer just devoted to cold, dead stuff because then it doesn't smell and it's not breaking down in my apartment. And then I just cart it out before trash day.
And then it thaws and then it starts to break down.
Yeah, it does its job out there and not in my home where I have to smell it.
All right, back to one of the more common questions that we've gotten from someone named Kalissa McEver.
As someone who lives in an apartment building that has never had a green waste bin, I'd like to know what the enforcement plan is for apartment owners to make sure the green bins are available for tenants, or what other options tenants have to be in compliance.
What if you live in a community and your landlord, your whatever, HOA, it doesn't have the green bins?
Yeah, this one actually hits home for me. And unfortunately, the answer is not a whole lot. What you can do after you have asked your landlord kindly is you can tell on them. That's what I did. And they're legally supposed to provide this. So I called and 2 weeks later, I got a green bin. Can't say that that's why, but, you know, might have helped. If your local government still won't play ball, so Los Angeles helped me, but if not, you can file a complaint directly with CalRecycle, the State Department, and they will look into it. The kind of bummer here, though, is while technically, yes, this is law and they are breaking the law by not providing you that service, consequences like violations or any sort of penal stuff, that doesn't go into effect until January of 2024. So you can make a fuss right now, like I did, but it's possible that landlords and local governments who are really dragging their feet could do that for another 7 months.
I never, ever, ever, ever want to underestimate anyone's intelligence, and especially my own, although, I mean, there are some things that confuse me, right? And when I'm thinking about these green bins, I'm also thinking, is this really ready for prime time? I mean, we're talking about pizza boxes on the bottom. You can't put plastic in there. It's really going to stink. You might have to put it in the freezer before. Like, that's a lot, Kaylee.
Yeah, it's a big ask. I mean, it was a big overhaul when we added blue bins and people got used to that. This is just sort of another one. But this is kind of a chicken and egg question because, you know, something's got to be ready first. Like, we aren't going to be able to build all these industrial composters until we have the supply that they need to function. So we need to start separating the food scraps first. Wagner with CalRecycle says today we're actually pretty far away from where we want to be.
Oh, we need to make so many more composters. We only have the capacity right now in California to break down about 50% of the organic waste that we're trying to divert.
So chances are, if you're throwing things in the green bin, not all of it's getting composted yet. There is more grant money coming in to build out that capacity, but some of the plants are private and they're not going to invest in creating more capacity until the supply is there to make their business worthwhile. So, but back to your question, are we ready for prime time? No, we're not yet. But her point is, Wagner's point is, we need to be proving ourselves and creating the substance to say to the composter, hey, we've got what you need to build this, and there's a lot that needs to happen here. I mean, we're trying to divert 75% of our organic waste from the landfill by 2025, and so you kind of need to start getting on board now. We kind of have to hatch that egg.
And it takes everybody to do this, right? I mean, it takes as many people as possible to make this really function successfully.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why is this so important, Kaylee? I mean, why are we trying to divert food from a landfill?
Because food is so much worse than other things in the landfill. Organic things, when they don't have the oxygen they need to break down, they release methane, which is 25 times more potent than carbon. It's this really, really terrible greenhouse gas emission. That's why you're seeing the Biden administration care so much trying to curb our methane specifically. When you put it in a composter, it's either not releasing methane in the same way, or it is, and the facility is harnessing it and turning it into energy instead of letting it all go into the atmosphere. So this isn't just about diverting stuff from landfill and filling up our landfills more slowly. It's also about curbing climate change and our greenhouse gas emissions, too.
So if you could have folks walk away with one piece of advice about using that green bin, what would you say? What are your final thoughts about this?
I think the main thing here is just try not to be intimidated. I know we're throwing a lot of information here at you, but it's kind of the idea of it's better to have a whole bunch of people trying to do something imperfectly than to have a very small group of people doing it really perfectly. If we're going to have this statewide system and diverting all of these pounds from our landfill, then try and give it a shot. We're only going to get better at this.
We're only going to get better at this, right? It you have to start someplace, and
yeah,
here we are.
And it takes a village. It's that whole idea.
KCRW's Kaylee Wells reporting for us. Kaylee, thanks for coming on, talking with us.
Anytime, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More now of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. How was your Earth Day? That was over the weekend, you know. And in just a few days from now, the annual City Nature Challenge kicks off. What started as a friendly rivalry between LA and San Francisco to document urban wildlife has now grown into a global event. Cities all around the world competing to observe and categorize and publicize the flora and the fauna that live among us. Leela Higgins, our longtime friend, is senior manager for community science at Los Angeles County's Natural History Museum, also one of the founders of the Nature Challenge, and she's back with us right now. Hi, Leela.
Hi, Steve.
So here we are. We've talked about the Nature Challenge before. There are some new things this year that we want to get into as well. But first and foremost, we have to go outside, don't we?
Yes, we do.
This is the City Nature Challenge. We're in a city, the city of Santa Monica, and we're going to step outside the KCRW studios and take a look at what is naturally outside. You want to go?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
This is the secret stairway. Nobody knows about this place.
Shh. Well, I'm just checking for spiders in the corners of the building.
You see anything? No.
Not right now. I mean, there's a web up there. That's a little higher.
Okay.
Then we can reach.
Just leave those guys alone.
All right, Leela. This is our own personal little KCRW garden, and we're looking for flora and fauna here. So we also have some new things this year, right? So explain the rules a little bit of what's going on.
Okay, so the City Nature Challenge, we're in our eighth year. It used to be LA versus San Francisco, and this year it's LA versus San Francisco and 483 other cities around the world taking part.
We have to compete with all these other cities too.
Yeah, well, we're more about collaboration since the pandemic happened. We're less about who's the winner and what can we all do together. How many observations of wildlife, plants, animals, mushrooms, evidence of life can we make together with these 483 other cities around the world?
All right, and the first thing we do is download the iNaturalist app.
So here in Los Angeles, yes, we use the iNaturalist app.
I'm in. So how do I have to observe,
yes,
right? So I'm going to take a picture of something.
Yeah. Do you see these plants right next to us?
Those look like weeds.
They are weeds, but they are still interesting observations.
Let's observe a weed. I love weeds.
Great.
All right.
Okay, so what kind of picture do you think you want to take of this plant so a scientist could identify it?
They'll need to see a budding flower.
Flowers are great for identification, absolutely. And because you have an iPhone, you could actually zoom in and get a great picture of the flower, and then you could get another picture of the leaf and another picture of the stem and then a picture of the whole plant.
So I took the picture of this weed.
Great. So you got your picture
there. What did you see is what
and
it asks.
Click on that. What did you see?
And I look up the species by name.
It's giving you some...
No.
Yes.
No.
It has artificial intelligence.
It knows this. Is it a sow thistle? Is it that what that is?
It is definitely a sow thistle. So click on that.
All right.
And then we're going to make sure, okay, 419, 415 p.m. It's got the address of the KCRW studios. It's not captive or cultivated because this is a weed. No one's looking after this weed. And you just press share and then... That is it.
I just shared.
Okay, and now it's syncing and it's uploading with your data. And this observation in about a minute will be in the system and available for everyone to see.
Okay. Now, all right, we did flora.
Yeah.
Now we want fauna.
Okay, so I actually was looking at these sow thistles, and underneath the leaves there are these tiny aphids. And I bought a little magnifier clip for you to put on your phone.
Oh my God, that's so
amazing.
So
you can take a picture of these aphids
all
up
right.
close.
Can you do it? You ready? I'm taking a picture. Okay. Now, I took a picture. I have to upload this picture, right?
Yes. So go into the app.
Okay. There it is. A subfamily, Aphidinae.
Yes. It's the aphid subfamily. So now you press done in the top right. There's that green done. Now you can press share. And you made your second observation.
Look at that! A south thistle.
South thistle and an aphid.
But you don't need to be out in nature, right? Anyone can do what we just did.
Well, we're literally next to a parking lot and a
This is like a concrete jungle over here. And we walked out and there's a nice little patch of nature, right? So anybody can do this.
Anyone can do it. You just need to have a digital camera or a cell phone that you can download the iNaturalist app onto.
And what does this do? So when we're, I mean, if it's no longer a competition, now we're collaborating with, you know, 400 some odd cities, right?
Yes.
That's a big deal. But what does this collaboration do? What does it get us?
So last year we got 1.67 million observations. And that's a snapshot of nature around the world in all of these different metropolitan areas. And with that sort of data, we can track change over time. We document thousands of rare and endangered species last year, and we will document more this year. And so if we don't know where plants and animals that are rare and endangered live, how do we know where to do our conservation efforts? So we really need this data to help inform how we're going to make our cities better places for humans and wildlife to live.
All right. So then there's the question, how? How do we do it? How do people get involved?
So here at LA, go to the Natural History Museum's website, and there's a whole page for City Nature Challenge. You can come and join us at one of our programs at the museum. We're doing an event on Sunday, April 30th at Whittier Narrows, which is a county park with our partners. There are all these other events that our 14 partners around the county are doing. So you could join Audubon Center at Debs Park. They're having a nature walk and bio blitz. You could join Nature for All on the lower LA River. They're doing a bio blitz. You could join the Santa Monica Mountains and go to a bio blitz there. They're having some night hikes at Paramount Ranch, and you'll get to hang out with scientists and they'll teach you how to use iNaturalist. But if you just want to do it in your own backyard, you can just follow the easy instructions on our website, download the iNaturalist app. One, go outside and find nature, take photos of that nature, and then share it to iNaturalist. Those three easy steps.
Once again, the City Nature Challenge kicks off in just a few days this week. Leela Higgins, our friend from the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County. Leela, as always, thanks for coming on. Thanks for showing us around.
Thanks, Steve, for having me.
Even more now of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. And let's hear from the late, great Huell Hauser with our Double Jeopardy answer.
Located right in the heart of downtown LA, this place has been around since 1917. It was full of customers back when it opened 70 years ago. And it's still full of customers today.
What is Grand Central Market?
Correct.
Thank you, Alex. Yeah, Grand Central Market's been around for a long, long time, but not 70 years. Now it's 106 years in business. But it's been going through some changes lately, and Mona Holmes from Eater LA is here to talk about some of those changes. Hi, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
One of our regulars, of course, Mona, and Grand Central Market has been a regular for me and for a lot of folks for many, many years in downtown LA, an institution. What is its connection, do you think, to the city?
Grand Central Market is so special. I mean, not only is it in the original building that it was that was erected 106 years ago, it's gone through, it's seen a lot. It's gone through global pandemics, two of them. It's also, you know, 100% the definition of a bazaar or a market, and it used to service all kinds of different LA residents. And this building itself hasn't changed much over the decades, other than like a few improvements and repairs. Just the vendors inside have been different. It's evolved very much from where people used to get produce and goods and services to now mostly food vendors. And it is one of the best places to go in Los Angeles. I've seen people from every walk of life be able to have a meal here, from those that have a ton of money and expensively dressed to those who might only have $2 in their pocket. You can get something to eat here. And no matter who you are. And I think that's what makes it so special, along with it being so central for downtown LA.
There have been a lot of departures, you mentioned, Mona, over the years, but even more so lately, most notably Chile Secos, which had been there for a long, long time. Where are they going, and do we have an idea of why they're leaving?
Well, as one of the oldest vendors, the operator Rocio Lopez inherited the stand from her father. It was where everyone all over town used to buy mole and chiles that were outstanding. And she retired. She was ready to do it, and no one else wanted to keep the stand going. The LA Times reports that the market's owners are hoping to revive something a little digitally. That hasn't happened yet. But this is a part of how the market changes and adapts, and, you know, some folks come and go. But I'm really sad to see them leave because they were a regular stop for me.
Other newer stalls are also leaving, right?
They are. There's been this interesting stand called PBJ LA. It was a gourmet peanut butter and jelly stand that left in early April. And then there's Clark Street Bread. They also walked away, but they left in February. Another place, Downtown LA Cheese, they ceased service over the weekend. And what's great about some of these is that you can still get some of these goods, like Clark Street Bread, Downtown LA Cheese, will still be available in Los Angeles. But then there's another one. We're not sure what's happening in the Horse Thief Barbecue space. They're one of Grand Central Market's most prominent vendors. There's something that's going to be coming in its place when they leave in May, but we're just not sure what that is yet.
I mean, is this a case of the rent is too damn high? Is this a case of people aren't, you know, doing the things that they used to do? The pandemic changed some things. I mean, what is going on here? Do we know?
This is the ebb and flow of the restaurant world. This is what happens. People move on. People run out of money. Others may, you know, it's very possible that rent can be a factor for anyone in this town. But this is a pretty significant number of folks coming in and out. So, and from what we can track, my colleague Farley Elliott wrote the initial story. From what we can track, it's just time for some change in those spaces.
With the changes that have been happening most recently, do you feel a change in the vibe, right? The aura, the realm. I mean, do you feel it? Does it feel like a different market these days than it was before?
It does. I mean, it felt different 10 years ago. It felt different 30. But now it's, you know, a lot of old timers, people who are longtime LA residents, are finding that it's not the same, that they feel that more moneyed restaurants and groups with lots of money and a lot of backing are moving in to these spaces that used to be inhabited by those who didn't have that type of profile. So, you know, there's a Melrose's Ghost Sando shop is moving into the Downtown LA Cheese space, which I think is actually a really good addition. But then there's folks like Broad Street Oyster Company and For the Win, who make burgers that are making a huge splash there. You know, the Donut Man moved in not that long ago. Have you ever been to the Donut Man, by the way?
I have not been to the Donut Man.
Gigantic donuts with berries on the inside.
Oh my God, that sounds so great.
I'll take you.
All right.
But it is phenomenal to see what these newcomers have done. And so I can absolutely tell you right now that the owners are trying to achieve some kind of balance to make sure that it doesn't feel too, for lack of a better term, hipstery. But I definitely see them wanting to respect the space and make sure that it continues to serve all of Los Angeles.
Mona Holmes, our regular here on GLA, of course, a reporter for Eater LA. Mona, as always, thanks for your insight. We're going to chew on all of this.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Steve.
That's all the time we have for this evening. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Alfresco. You know, the city of LA and the planning department is releasing new rules for outdoor dining after the first draft came under some pretty heavy fire. We're going to talk about that tomorrow on GLA. And check us out at the website anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. You can connect with us there and share your story with us. Tell us what's on your mind and get the podcast as well, all online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Or get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Jay Siebold, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordall all helped put the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and, of course, that ear. Have a great night.